are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Karen, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the East Aurora Advertiser. Let's see here, the November 27th, 2025 issue, and it's on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Okay, first article is titled Village Residents Sue Village and Developer Over Pine Street Project. A group of village residents referring to themselves as the Piners have filed a lawsuit against the Village of East Aurora and Alliance Homes regarding the approval of the minor subdivision application for a three-house project at the intersection of Girard Avenue and Pine Street. The Article 78 lawsuit alleges that the application for the project was processed and approved in clear violation of Village Code safeguards. The minor subdivision application proposes the subdivision of the parcel and extension of the public sewer main by 194 feet. The lawsuit alleges that this is against code, which defines any subdivision requiring the extension of public infrastructure, including a sewer main, is a major subdivision. By misclassifying the application, the Village Board bypassed the heightened procedural and substantive scrutiny required for major subdivisions under the Village Code, the lawsuit alleges. The lawsuit also alleges that significant impacts on community character, tree clearing, traffic, and existing public infrastructure were not meaningfully evaluated as part of the State Environmental Quality Review Act, and the public was denied the opportunity for informed participation. The Piners are seeking an annulment of the approved application, remand for proper processing and environmental review, and a temporary injunction relief to stop clearing and construction while the petition is heard. The Piners are defined as grassroots, unincorporated association of village residents who live near the project, and their purpose is to preserve green space along and near Pine Street. Lynn Chimera is listed as the president of the Piners. Other listed members who live in the area include Joe Chimera, Joanne and Peter Ryan, Shelby Duck, and Timothy Vukelic, Michelle Parrish, and Christy and Stephen Davis. Center Street resident Molly Masajewski is also a listed member in the group. Okay, next we have the Boys and Girls Clubs Western New York Collaborative establishes headquarters in East Aurora. Down at the north end of the Boys and Girls Club of East Aurora building, away from the main entrance and most of the hubbub of activity that defines the place, a relatively new organization has set up shop and is making the EA Club and all the 12 clubs of the area more effective at serving youth by collective fundraising, advocacy, and program development. A few weeks ago, the Boys and Girls Clubs Collaborative of Western New York established its headquarters on Payne Street, with Tracy Bradshaw as executive director, Misty Huizinger as director of development, and Amy Santiago as administrative assistant. The Western New York Collaborative provides a powerful single voice, a megaphone, as Bradshaw says, when it comes to advocating for the 13,000 kids across Western New York who are served by clubs in four counties and 41 locations. Along with Bradshaw's team, the executive directors of these 12 Boys and Girls Clubs make up the collaborative: Buffalo, DPU in Lancaster, East Aurora, Eden Lakeshore, EMW, Holland, Jamestown, Niagara Falls, Northern Chautauqua, CTS, or requesting donations. They wanted to see what we could do together. That's when TM Mom is one to advocate for our kids together. Whereas a smaller club like East Aurora might have had a hard time getting invited to conversations, say at the state level, as part of a larger organization, we are all invited. Bradshaw has also found that when appealing as a collaborative, the mention of Boys and Girls Club resonates with so many politicians and business leaders who are themselves former club kids. Already this approach has yielded great dividends. Such as state funding for mental health. We now have licensed mental health counselors in each one of our clubs, thanks to the funding, and beautiful spaces for counseling. Often these mental health professionals are on the club's staff, part of that club's family, so the stigma of visiting a counselor is lessened. It becomes part of their day at their local club. The collaborative also hosts regional events, region-wide events, like a conference with staff from all over Western New York to discuss best practices and flag football tournaments. Other events introduce kids to their counterparts at other clubs so they get to know one another. They're hoping to offer a youth conference, perhaps at Camp Skanoka San. A recent flyer produced by the collaborative representing their Western New York Needs Clubs kids highlights the value of Boys and Girls Clubs and the need for the funds the collaborative is able to secure. One in two kids don't have access to after-school programs. One in six are left alone at home. Two out of three are below recommended levels for reading and math. According to the collaborative data, it costs $1,023 to serve each Boys and Girls Club member. Membership dues cover only a fraction of that cost. Add to that the one in five kids who are on scholarships because, as Bradshaw says, no kid is ever turned away for inability to pay. And you see how easy it is for the 12 clubs to spend $2.8 million on scholarships. Bradshaw comes to the collaborative from her hometown of Cuba, New York. I ran after-school programs that were all school-based. We provided after-school programming in 11 of the 12 school districts in Allegheny County through two funding sources, New York State Advantage After School and 21st Century, which is federal, and those two sources supported that program. We were serving one in four kids in Allegheny County, and it was a very similar model to this. Because we were able to serve more kids by having all these schools under one umbrella, we had a seat at the table in Albany. After a stint down south, Bradshaw came home, applied for the executive directorship, and was appointed. "It makes a lot of sense for us to be in East Aurora," she said. "When you're looking for a megaphone for the voice of 13,000 kids, East Aurora is where we want to start that conversation from, because it really is the pinnacle of Boys and Girls Clubs in Western New York." Follow the collaborative bgc-cwny.org. Next we have 120-unit multifamily housing project proposed in the village. A 120-unit multifamily housing project has been proposed at 270 Quaker Road on an area of land between Bank of Holland and Delavan. The project plans include a clubhouse, a mix of parking spaces and garages, landscaping, a storm water management system, lighting, and utility improvements. On November 17th, the Village Board unanimously voted to send the project to the Planning Commission for review at the December 2nd meeting. Young Development Incorporated, operating at 260 Quaker Road, LLC, has submitted two applications that will need to be reviewed by the Planning Commission. The first is an application for a minor subdivision, which will separate a 12.08-acre parcel from a 15.4-acre lot. The second application is to rezone the new parcel from general manufacturing to general residential. The new zoning would allow for the development of multifamily dwellings. According to the plan included in the application, 12 multifamily dwellings may be proposed. They would contain 2-bedroom and 3-bedroom room apartments, floor plans of potential units, as well as a full multifamily dwelling have been included in the application. The full application can be found as part of the agenda for the village's November 17th meeting. In a memo to the village board, Code Enforcement Officer Elizabeth Cassidy stated that a stormwater pollution prevention plan was not required at this stage, but would be provided with a future site plan application. A referral of the plan will also be sent to the Erie County Planning Department due to the proximity of State Route 20A and the municipal boundary to the project. The Planning Commission will meet at 7 p.m. Tuesday, December 2nd, in the Aurora Municipal Center on Oakwood Avenue. Okay, next we have traffic and community safety. The East Aurora Village Board meeting on November 17th included extensive discussion on pedestrian safety, traffic, and potential intersection improvements. People in attendance said they are concerned with the conditions under which students are crossing the streets to get to their bus stops, particularly at the intersection between Pine and Warren Streets. Adding a four-way stop or some other form of intersection was discussed for various locations throughout town, with the most probable being at the intersection between Girard and Pine Streets. Bus routes are being questioned by residents who observe children 5 to 13 years old crossing the busy streets in order to catch the bus to school every morning. No matter what the weather, these children are crossing busy streets in the dark, and many of them do not look before crossing. This increases the risk of getting hit by large vehicles that pass through the town. These young kids have to cross Pine Street to catch a school bus in the morning when it's dusk out, Joanne Ryan said, who lives on the Pine Street extension. We have 18-wheel trucks flying down the street. Shame on us that we are letting these kids cross. Residents report that most cars will not stop for the children, making the situation dangerous. Since many children have started crossing on their own, the East Aurora Union Free School District is getting contacted more frequently concerning safety in the morning. Possible solutions that were discussed include getting a crossing guard during the winter months and revising the bus routes. I will definitely follow up with the school to see what their requirements are, Police Chief Pat Welch said. Generally, when there's a bus stop, the kids are supposed to wait on the side of the street they live on. And when the bus driver activates the red lights and deems it safe, then they can cross the street to the bus. In other traffic concerns, the efficacy of a four-way stop at the intersection between East Fillmore and Pine Streets was discussed. If the village were to go through with this idea, a request would have to be submitted to Erie County because Pine Street is a county road. Additional crosswalks were considered to help with the traffic created by events such as the outdoor markets on Riley Street, and Erie County completed a traffic survey of the area in December 2024, but did not think that Pine and East Fillmore had enough traffic to meet the requirements necessary for this change. The engineer instead recommended that the village should request a traffic study for the intersection between Girard and Pine Streets. The board discussed the need for traffic studies of various intersections around town, coming to the conclusion that they should be conducted during busier months, such as in the spring, rather than in the middle of winter. Sycamore Street resident Rachel Francis proposed the idea of creating a crosswalk between Barbill Tavern and the bar at Main and Hamlin on Main Street. The crosswalks at Pasquale's Italian Restaurant and the Circle are not sufficient, she said, as many people will cross on their own in the midst of heavy traffic. It's a traffic nightmare there, Francis said. It's also a safety nightmare. This crosswalk, however, raises feasibility concerns. With parking on both sides of the street, several spaces would have to be removed in order to create a space for crossing. And the New York State, who oversees Main Street, which is part of Route 20A, is not likely to approve this modification. Lowering the speed limit for vehicles coming into the village from Girdle Road was discussed as a solution for many traffic problems that the village is currently facing. The East Aurora Village Board will meet again at 7 p.m. on December 1st at the Aurora Municipal Center on Oakwood Avenue. And you are listening to a reading of articles and features from the East Aurora Advertiser on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Okay, next we have Share the Joy of Reading This Season. This holiday season, the Friends of the Aurora Town Public Library invite the community to share the joy of reading by shopping at the ongoing book sale. Hardcover books cost $2 each. Paperbacks and movies are $1 each. Puzzles are individually priced. All proceeds from the sale benefit the Friends of the Library, a 501c3 nonprofit group that promotes and assists the library in funding programs, materials, furniture, and equipment. The library is located on 550 Main Street in East Aurora. Next is the Aurora Police Report. Forgeries reported in East Aurora. A 79-year-old has reported to be the victim of fraud following a fraudulent check attempting to be cashed on Wednesday, November 12th. The bank manager stated that they had possession of a check made out to a 19-year-old male from Hamburg in the amount of over $8,400 for services of completing an epoxy basement floor. The check was signed by the 19-year-old subject. The report says the bank manager stated that the check was not the typical quality stock checks, and when she compared the signature on the check, it did not match. The check numbers were also reportedly out of range of the checks being written recently by the account holder. The subject stated that he had received the check directly from the victim for services and admitted that he had signed the check. An attempt was made to contact the victim, and a voicemail was left. The subject was taken to the station for processing. Contact was made with the victim, who stated that he never had any contact with the individual and did not receive any services regarding his basement floor. The subject stated that an unknown contact reached out to him on social media app about making money. The subject stated the unknown individual picked him up and drove him to East Aurora to cash the check, and upon completion of the transaction, the subject would share the money with him. A limited description of the individual was provided by the subject. The check has been logged into evidence. A 52-year-old male from East Aurora has reportedly been the victim of fraud following an incident that occurred on Thursday, October 2nd. According to the report, the victim was on his online banking account in October when he observed that money had been drawn from his account by two personal checks. The victim stated that when he pulled up the checks, he noticed that they were not his checks and he did not fill them out. Both checks were made out for approximately $250 for a massage and signed with the victim's initials only. The address listed on the checks was incorrect and the number on the checks were incorrect. The victim also stated that he does not use his initials as his signature. The victim stated that he went to the bank to get his money reimbursed and needed a police report for documentation. Grand larceny. A third supplementary report was filed following the theft of a commercial vehicle from Davis Road in West Falls that occurred on Thursday, November 6. The value of the theft totaled over $20,000. The initial report is listed in the November 13th edition of the East Aurora Advertiser. On Thursday, November 13th, the owner of the stolen vehicle stated that she found property in her vehicle, including identification belonging to a female. The property was received and logged into an evidence locker. Shoplifting. A report of shoplifting occurred at a Gray Street grocery store at 1 p.m. Sunday, November 16th. According to the report, the assistant manager of the store stated that an unknown male had filled a grocery cart with over $550 of merchandise and walked past all points of sale without attempting to pay for the items. A description was given of the male. The assistant manager said that she and other staff followed the male out of the store and were able to retrieve the reportedly stolen goods. The individual reportedly walked back into the store, claiming that he had forgotten to pay for the items, but after a short time, ran out of the store. An employee attempted to follow the individual, but lost sight of him. The complainant stated that surveillance footage would be provided at a later time. The area was canvassed with negative results. The investigation remains pending. Death attended. An unconscious male was reported in an East Aurora residence at 6:30 a.m. Saturday, November 22nd. According to the report, the 65-year-old male was observed lying on the floor and appeared to not be breathing. No pulse was confirmed. Paramedics arrived on the scene and performed advanced life-saving measures. The time of death was called at 7:05 a.m. The doctor for the deceased signed off on the death certificate, citing recent health issues. A funeral home took possession of the deceased. Driving while intoxicated. A 43-year-old female from East Aurora was charged with DWI following a traffic stop that occurred on Oakwood Avenue at 1 a.m. Sunday, November 23rd. According to the report, a vehicle was observed traveling southbound on Elm Street, making a right-hand turn onto Oakwood Avenue and failing to use a turn signal. A traffic stop was conducted. The driver of the vehicle reportedly had an odor of alcohol emanating from her breath and glassy eyes. The subject stated that she was traveling from a bar on Main Street to her friend's house and had consumed three alcoholic beverages prior to driving her vehicle. After failing standard field sobriety tests, the subject was placed under arrest and transported to the station for processing. A vehicle inventory was conducted, the vehicle was towed from the scene, and a 12-hour hold was placed on it. At the station, a breathalyzer test showed the subject had a blood alcohol content of 0.14%. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the East Aurora Advertiser on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Okay, next we have the Erie County Sheriff's Report. Two vehicle accident in Alma. Erie County Sheriff's deputies responded to a two-vehicle accident that occurred on the intersection between Girdle and Bullis Roads in Alma on November 19th. No injuries were reported. Information was exchanged between the drivers, and both vehicles were driven from the scene. In other area calls handled in by the Erie County Sheriff deputies out of the Clarence and Alma substation. November 13th, no incidents were reported on this date. November 14th, a dog escaped and was loose in the area around Chair Factory Road in Alma. The dog was located and returned to the owner. A vehicle was reported speeding up and down the road on Stoll Road in Alma. Multiple vehicles were doing burnouts on the road, but were not located. November 15th, a resident of Busch Garden Street in Marilla reported that an animal could be heard crying in their garage. A dog with tags was located in the garage and was returned to its owner. November 16th, no incidents were reported on this date. November 17th, no incidents were reported on this date. November 18th, a vehicle was reportedly parked in a lot after hours on Olean Road in Holland. The owner was located and stated that they were cleaning the building after closing. A resident of East Holland Road in Holland reported receiving unwanted messages from an unknown number. The subject agreed to cease communication immediately. November 19th, an odor of natural gas was detected in a residence on Olean Road in Wales. The residence was ventilated and National Fuel was alerted of the incident. Okay, next we have residents are urged to protect belongings. A town meeting was held at West Falls Fire Company on Friday, November 14th, in response to a public concern over a rash of car break-ins and thefts over the recent weeks. West Falls Fire Commissioner Jim Walczak organized the forum, which included East Aurora Police Chief Patrick Welsh, Deputy Shane Miller from the Erie County Sheriff's Office, and Lieutenant Dustin Waldron from East Aurora. Approximately 40 residents were in attendance. The officers briefed the attendees on the recent crimes and provided information on what can be done to discourage this activity. The officers stated that most of the car break-ins and thefts have been crimes of opportunity. Unlocked vehicles, valuables left in plain sight, such as wallets and laptops, keys left in the vehicle, and garage doors left open. The offenders are not believed to be locals. The ring of car break-ins and thefts has been expanding geographically and has now reached the East Aurora, West Falls, Colden, Boston, and Holland area. Most suspects that have been apprehended have been juveniles 13 to 15 years old. They are working with a driver who is at the lookout, and usually a team of two who are on foot doing the thefts. They are searching for unlocked vehicles, stealing the contents, and sometimes even the vehicle itself if the keys are available. They have been making off with thousands of dollars in cash, wallets, electronics, tools, and anything of value, Wells said. The stolen vehicles are usually recovered, emptied of contents, and dropped off elsewhere. They are either gaining entry to the vehicle through unlocked doors or open windows. If valuables are in plain sight, they may smash and grab, as was the case recently, where a laptop and wallet were stolen. Otherwise, they usually do not break the windows to gain entry. If the keys are available and left in the center console, they may steal the vehicle. They are not hot-wiring a vehicle to steal it, and they are not stripping the vehicles. They are efficient and have methods to avoid detection. Welsh went on to say that two residents in the area were impacted twice because they thought they couldn't get hit a second time, and so did not lock their vehicles. It's like feeding deer, he added. As residents become more educated, these crimes will become less lucrative and more difficult for the thieves to carry out. One community member in attendance asked what the rights of the homeowners are. The officers stressed that these are vehicle break-ins. They do not justify force. Do not confront them with a firearm. Do not get all keyed up and use force, Wells said. If confronted, the perpetrator will most likely run away. The best option is to create deterrence, and they cannot be stressed enough. Always lock your cars, garage, and house. Do not leave valuables out in plain sight. Use outdoor lights, motion lights, and cameras. Keep a spotlight or flashlight near your door to deter and identify. If you catch them in the act, they will usually run. If you see them, gather as much information as possible, such as what they look like, what they wear, what direction they took off in. If on foot, did they flee in a neighborhood, on the road, or the woods? If there is a vehicle, what make, model, color, license plate, and direction it was traveling? The direction helps officers to know which way to pursue. If you have a house phone and call 911, it will automatically go to the proper jurisdiction. If you use your cell phone to call 911, it will get bounced around. Having the direct number for your jurisdiction ahead of time will save minutes. If your property or vehicle is stolen, you are likely to get your items back, although some wallets have been recovered on the side of the road, and a few items have been recovered more likely if they have identifiable features, but don't count on it. Stolen vehicles are usually recovered. Officers said the suspicious activity to take note of includes a vehicle parked on the road, especially with the lights off, or if the same vehicle is circulating the area twice or more. Patrol cars are equipped to quickly run the license plate of suspicious vehicles, Wells said. Trust your instinct. If something seems unusual or out of place, report it. Some of the recent occurrences have taken place between 4 and 5:30 a.m., but have been as early as any time after dark. They have also taken place during the daytime, such as the park. Talk to your neighbors, share information, stay informed of unusual or suspicious activity. Look out for each other. When everyone works together, it creates a safer place. The officers described another activity to be aware of as well. Criminals posing as a utility worker, stating that they are there to turn off services unless you make a payment, Welsh said. The utility companies will never do this. Always ask for a proper ID. Do not let them into your house. Do not hand them your phone or give them your personal information or bank information. Do not provide the opportunity to become a victim. Okay, next we have Erie County introduces new tool to monitor weather. Winter weather is on the horizon, and Erie County residents will have another tool in their kit for tracking storms and obtaining accurate, up-to-the-minute information on the severity and path of the storm with the Erie County Winter Weather Storm Scale, ECWSS, a new website rich with weather information to help people make informed decisions and stay safe. Based on the Winter Storm Severity Index, the ECWSS features color-coded maps detailing the impacts of snow events countywide and at the local level, with users able to track the snow as it falls where they are or anywhere in the county. Also included are cross-sections of the New York State Thruway in Erie and adjacent counties, showing weather impacts there, maps detailing blowing snow impacts and their locations, snowfall probabilities, storm histories, and much more. developed in collaboration with Erie County, SUNY Albany, and the SUNY Albany Center of Excellence in Weather and Climate Analytics. The ECWSS presents a real-time map of winter weather-related impacts to people by demographic and places within the county. It is updated hourly, approximately 15 minutes past the hour, using the latest available National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration data. The ECWSS can be found at nyswrcc.org/coeweather/ecwss/index.html. Next, we have local author will sign books at the Bookworm. East Aurora author J.C. Moore will debut The Winter of Hidden Knives, the second book in his Shadow Bay thriller series, set in a small town south of Buffalo, during a book signing at the Bookworm and BW Gifts in East Aurora from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, December 13th. In this book, Shadow Bay braces for a late winter storm when a longtime local is found dead in his garage. The scene is too neat, too controlled, and Chief Shauna Peterson knows a stage job when she sees one. The investigation drags her back to a summer the town refuses to face, a teenage girl who vanished, a night built on lies, and a secret that never stopped shaping the people who survived it. As Shauna pushes deeper, Shadow Bay tightens around her. Council members sidestep her questions. Business owners look the other way, and a few powerful names work hard to keep the past buried, no matter who ends up in the ground. The closer she gets, the more she realizes the danger isn't circling the town, it's circling her. Someone remembers exactly what happened that summer. Someone who's been waiting for the storm to roll in and for the bodies to follow. And the person behind it all knows every one of Shauna's weaknesses. In Shadow Bay, the cold doesn't just hide the truth, it shields the people willing to kill for it. The Winter of Hidden Knives is the follow-up to Moore's Secrets from a Serial Killer, which launched just this past summer. Book one introduces the world and people of Shadow Bay amidst the backdrop of a serial killer that's preying on women in the town. Book three in the series, Behind All the Dark Roads, focuses on the impact of a mysterious cult has on the small town of Shadow Bay and will be available in early 2026. Simultaneously, Moore has started an action thriller series based on protagonist Frank Mallory, a former military man who finds himself and his loved ones tangled up in the crosshairs of organized crime. Book one of that series, Dead Man's Payback, is out now, with book two, Dead Man's Justice, to follow in early 2026. Prior to his splash in the cinematic thriller market, Moore was a prolific and renowned horror writer with over 10 published novellas and short story collections to his name. For more information on author J.C. Moore, visit www.jcmooreauthor.com. Next, we have 16 students complete county paramedic program. The Erie County Department of Health recently announced that 16 students have completed the inaugural Paramedic Academy course, a 10-month program that recently earned New York State an COAEMSP Letter of Review accreditation. These graduates are eligible to test for the state paramedic certification exam and the National Registry paramedic certification exam, qualifying them to serve as paramedics in paid or volunteer roles. Erie County recruited students for the Paramedic Academy in late 2024 for the 2025 program, which aims to increase the number of certified paramedics able to work and volunteer with local ambulance services, including Erie County's ambulance service. The program included 500 hours of classroom and laboratory instruction and 424 hours of hands-on clinical training in hospitals and healthcare settings. Paramedics are trained to provide advanced life support services, including intubation, IV insertion, EKG interpretation, and the administration of more than 30 medications in the field, skills that go beyond the scope of EMT level care. Two paramedic classes are scheduled in 2026, one daytime and another for evening classes. Both classes are scheduled to start in January with a total class of 28 students. For more information, visit www.erie.gov/EMS/Erie County Paramedic Program. Next, we have Celebrate the Holiday Season with the Abigails. The Abigails Holiday Sale, taking place at historic Millard Fillmore Presidential Site on Shearer Avenue in East Aurora, is scheduled to take place 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. December 6th. The museum has once again been transformed into a winter setting, and each room of the house will showcase handcrafted items that are for sale. This year, new collections will be introduced, including Abigail's Linen Closet, Abigail's Jewelry Box, Abigail's Holiday, Abigail's Kitchen, and more. This year's featured raffle item, crafted by Rick Haynes Stetter, is an arts and crafts style cherry entry cabinet. Raffle tickets are available for $5 each or $5 for $20. Tickets may be purchased during the sale or in advance from an Abigail or member of the Aurora Historical Society. Seasonal arrangements of fresh greens prepared by the East Aurora Garden Club will be offered outside in front of the carriage house. All proceeds from the sale directly support the Aurora Historical Society. And you're listening to a reading of articles and features from the East Aurora Advertiser on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Next, we have Clark siblings reunited after decades apart. Theodore and Cynthia Clark, also known as Teddy and Cindy, will be spending the holidays together under the same roof for the first time in decades. Teddy is in his 80s and Cindy is in her 70s. They are both developmentally disabled and they live at an individual residential alternative, IRA, offered by SASI Incorporated called Killarney, located in Derby. This house is where the elderly population goes to spend the rest of their time, Jackie Friedenberg said, who is Killarney's residential team leader. Cindy has lived at the location for the last 3 years, and Teddy moved in on August 19th. Right away, Cindy began telling everyone that he was her brother, but staff members were not aware that Cindy had a brother. In the past, she had only spoken about a sister named Geraldine. Cindy prayed for her every night, and Geraldine sent a card around the holidays. Before August, Cindy had never mentioned a brother. Cindy would comment that he was her brother, and we went along with it, Friedenberg said. Cindy has always wanted a family, but the extent of her family is what we provide her at Killarney. After Teddy moved in, he and Cindy began coloring together, having coffee together, and Cindy was excited to see him each day. During a staff meeting, Friedenberg said, the conversation turned to discuss the similarities between Teddy and Cindy. They have the same blue eyes, same physical characteristics in the face, and the same last name, Clark. We still thought it was impossible, Friedenberg said. How could two people living until their 70s and 80s, living with Sassy, not know about each other? Nobody at SASI knew either. The manager of the house began to look at their profiles and discover that Teddy has a sister named Geraldine as well. Then Friedenberg started to look into their profiles, such as intake documents from when they joined SASI, and she began searching online where she found the obituary of their mother, Helen. The obit listed three children, Theodore, Cynthia, and Geraldine. This was the final proof that they are, in fact, siblings, she said. Friedenberg said that this connection has been very emotional for the staff members and the management team at Killarney. Cindy says goodbye to him each morning before she heads out to her day program. Teddy stays at the Killarney during the day because he is retired. When Cindy comes home, Teddy is the first one she wants to see, and she asks the staff how his day was. In the evening, they sit in the recliners and watch TV together. Teddy is adjusting to the idea of living with a sister. Cindy lived with their family until 1991 and then transitioned into a family care home with People Incorporated until 2018. With the help of an advocate, she made her way to SASI as she aged. Friedenberg said that Teddy's records indicate he was institutionalized as a child, so his understanding of what family is minimal. He lived at Newark Development Center in Wayne County until it closed in 1991. There are no records of his living situation after he left until 1998, when he moved into an IRA with another agency. In 2006, he joined SASI and lived at an IRA on Healer Drive in East Aurora. There is limited information, Friedenberg said. Cindy lived with the family for much longer, and there are some gray area in the 1990s because there are no records of where Teddy lived. It is possible he was home. Geraldine's daughter said she recalled stories of Uncle Ted, but she hadn't heard about him in decades. Friedenberg said that Cindy knowing that Teddy is her brother is just what she needed. She described Cindy as being compassionate, and she had added Teddy to her nightly prayers. Ted is living his best life now, Friedenberg said. He is happy and handsome, but the peace of life from the institutional days is sad for staff members to think about. However, it has a beautiful end result. Okay, next we have Marilla Kiwanis Club Complete Sock Drive. The Kiwanis Club of Marilla collected socks for active duty military and veteran men and women during the Marilla Veterans Ceremony on Sunday, November 9th. Club members also supplied apples to attendees that day. The collection continued during the following week at the Marilla Town Hall, accumulating 405 pairs of socks. The next fundraiser for the club is the purchase of commemorative bulbs for the Kiwanis Christmas tree in the Marilla Pavilion. Bulb cost is $1 per name and can be purchased at the Marilla Country Store until noon Tuesday, December 9th. Club President Jennifer Ackman invites everyone to stop by the Kiwanis table for free hot chocolate during the Christmas in Marilla event on December 13th. The event will take place at Marilla United Methodist Church on 2 Rod Road. In under Historians Corner, Roycroft Inn hosted East Aurora's first tree lighting in 1914. On Christmas Eve 1914, East Aurora hosted what was likely among the first electrified Christmas tree lighting ceremonies in the world. Just a decade after the first recorded use of outdoor electric Christmas lights on a tree in San Diego in 1904, and just 2 years after the first public tree lighting ceremony with electric lights in New York City's Madison Square Park in 1912, East Aurora flipped the switch on 250 electric lamps adorning a 35-year-old evergreen tree on the Roycroft campus. Although the exact location of the pine tree is unknown, an account in the East Aurora Advertiser noted that the evergreen was located outside the Roycroft Inn and had been planted more than three decades earlier by Christopher Peek, a prominent village businessman and former East Aurora supervisor who once owned much of the land surrounding what later became the Roycroft campus. East Auroran veteran Yaw described as the advertiser as a disciple of Thomas A. Edison, provided the electrical expertise for the historic holiday display. The tree will be lighted with 250 electric lamps, white, red, blue, and yellow, the advertiser promised, adding, "The juice will be turned on at 6 o'clock. You are invited to come and see the Roycroft Christmas tree and bring the kitties. If you have no kitties, perhaps you can borrow a few for the occasion." Christmas trees were not a new concept in 1914. However, most of the trees after the Civil War, when the tradition was growing in popularity in the U.S., were erected in churches and other public venues, not in homes. Electric Christmas lights date back to 1882, but their expense made them cost prohibitive for most people until after World War II. The Roycroft and its founder, Albert Hubbard, no doubt, played a role in bringing a big city tree lighting to the small village of East Aurora for Christmas Eve 1914. No report about the event appeared in the following week's issue of the Advertiser, so results of the first tree lighting are unknown. However, the festivities do not appear to have immediately spurred an annual tradition. No news reports indicate that the Roycroft hosted a tree lighting the following year in 1915, perhaps due to the death of Albert and Alice Hubbard aboard the RMS Lusitania the previous May. In 1916, a more modestly lit community tree was illuminated with electric bulbs at 6:45 p.m. Christmas Eve on the grounds of the Methodist Church at Main and Center Streets. The Roycroft Band was on hand to lead the crowd in the singing of Christmas carols. A community fundraiser was held to pay the electric bill for the 100 bulbs and the star, which remained lit between Christmas and New Year's Day. The 1916 Christmas Eve ceremony was considered a success, according to the account in the following week's East Aurora Advertiser. However, the lights from the tree must not have been very bright because many of the adult carolers suffered from a lack of volume, partly due to insufficient light for the reading of the programs containing the lyrics. Organizers had hoped to make the municipal tree lighting and caroling an annual celebration, but there is no mention of it in the newspaper in the following few years. That's likely due to the U.S. becoming involved in World War I in 1917. According to newspaper headlines, just before Christmas that year, civic efforts were focused instead on assisting the American Red Cross and sending Christmas care packages to members of the armed forces. An electrified community Christmas tree was back on the Roycroft campus in 1919 when a Christmas Eve ceremony was held with the singing of carols. It is unclear if or where the tradition continued in 1920, but it is known that the large pine tree on the grounds of the Methodist Church at Main and Center Street was illuminated again in 1921 when the East Aurora Advertiser deemed it the community Christmas tree. The church's Epworth League arranged for the wiring and illumination, the newspaper reported. Extensive holiday decorating was curtailed during World War II when the production of holiday lights was virtually halted. Moreover, bright Christmas lights were banned by the government out of fear that they would be noticed by enemy pilots. East Aurora business owners banded together to bring holiday cheer back to Main Street in 1951 when Merry Christmas banners and other decorations were hung on the railroad overpass to brighten the shopping experience. Arrangements are made for the playing of records through amplifying systems outside of three stores along Main Street, the Advertiser reported. The Chamber of Commerce stepped things up quite a bit the following year when the community Christmas tree was illuminated for the first time at the traffic circle at the west end of the village. And you've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the East Aurora Advertiser. We read from the East Aurora Advertiser every Saturday at 10 a.m. Your reader has been Karen, and thank you very much for listening. And take care of yourself and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Coming up next on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have a reading of the Niagara Gazette. At noon, we have the Dunkirk Observer. And at 1 o'clock, we have some of our Northtown Bees, including Amherst, Clarence, Cheektowaga, Lancaster, and Depew. Stay with us for these readings and more throughout the day. You're listening to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. As of this year, our agency has broadcast more than 300,000 hours of radio readings. Volunteer radio readers read newspapers, magazines, and books to area people who are blind or have a print disability, who are provided reading radios. Radio Reading's broadcast signal is provided at no charge by WNED. Radio Reading broadcasts from studios at 1199 Harlem Road in suburban Buffalo. Please let others know about Radio Reading. It's your service. For more information on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, call 716-821-5555. following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision,